You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Geveller.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show, broadcasting to you on octalkradio.net. I'm Doug Geveller, and I'm going to be your host for today. While we're getting our guest on the line, let me just say that my partner Rick Franzi and I are business owners like many of you listening, and we've been creating and facilitating CEO peer groups for 15 years here in Orange County, California, all under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. That's www.executiveforums.com. These forums are the opportunity for you to meet with like-minded business executives and work on problems that are common to all businesses today. You know, our goal here on Critical Mass and our goal in our forum is really to help business owners and executives make better business decisions. One thing that we have found to be true is in making better business decisions, the more involved you are with a CEO peer group, the more likely you are to get a fresh new perspective and therefore new solutions to your problems. So if you're not familiar with this kind of a group, you might want to read Rick's book on CEO peer groups with the same title as this radio show, Critical Mass. It's now in its third printing, and I would highly recommend that you add it to your reading list. You can find the book on Amazon.com. Just put in Rick Franzi under author, and it'll take you right to it. That's Rick, R-I-C, Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. We know in addition to executive forums, we also offer executive coaching services, employee development programs, facilitate strategic planning sessions for our clients. And I personally have been a member of the International Coach Federation and a master certified coach for 14 years. I'm also the past president of the Orange County chapter of the ICF, and you can learn more about our coaching practice on our business website, criticalmassforbusiness.com. That's F-O-R for criticalmassforbusiness.com. Well, we've got another exciting show lined up for you to kind of wrap up this week. It's been a great week, and it's going to continue to be a good week. So our guest today, Kimberly Kovacs, CEO and co-founder of Option Ease, Inc. And we're excited to have Kim on our show today because she has a great perspective on how to create and build successful technology firms. Hello, Kim, and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Good afternoon, Doug. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Oh, the pleasure is all going to be ours. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with our listening audience. You know, as we get started, why don't you kind of set up the dialogue today by telling our audience about your path to Option Ease?
Well, it seems like, the overnight success that took 18 years to get here. So started out as a CFO. I've been a CFO for literally 18 years, both in private and public companies, most of them here in Orange County. And what I recognized as a CFO is that we lacked some tools that we needed, especially in the regulatory compliance area. And that prompted us to start Option Ease almost 4 years ago. In fact, next Monday is our four-year anniversary for our company here in Orange County. And we develop software applications, as I said, that are for the CFO. And these are to help that that accountant and that CFO, meet the regulatory requirements that are now part of our life. And so our applications are all online, on demand, and software as a service.
Well, that's great. And you know what? I would sing you happy birthday to celebrate your anniversary, but I understand that's still a copyright protected song and I don't want to pay the royalties. So let me just say congratulations on your fourth anniversary.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So it's been a really, really good 4 years for us, and we're looking for many more to come. So
that's great. You know, I like the way you started it out saying that you are an overnight 18 year success story. Isn't that the truth? You know, all these overnight successes are the result of years of hard work, planning, frustration, and a lot of discipline to keep going.
Absolutely. And, that's really a critical piece for us is, the dedication. And I've got a team of people now that are very dedicated to, assisting our clients. And, having been a CFO and understanding the complexities of that job and, all of the requirements that a CFO has. And, you know, it's a very uncomfortable position in a lot of ways because you've got to put your name on things and you have to be an expert. And there's so many regulatory issues now, it's really challenging for that CFO to be that expert, and that's where we come in. And so I've got a whole team of people here. We have former CPAs and Big Four auditors and so forth that really back up that CFO client of ours. And so because of that, we've had a tremendous amount of growth. I mean, even last year with this economy in the state that it was in, you know, we were 60% growth, you know, during that last year also. And I think that's just a testament of the team that I have. And so I'm really grateful to the team, and it makes me want to come in here every day and work harder.
Well, that's an amazing success story to have growth in these kind of times. Kim, I might just mention, it sounds like you might be a little close to your mic. If you can move it a little bit further back, we're getting a little bit of static feedback. Otherwise, don't worry about it. What you have to say is more important than how clear it comes across. So, you know, tell me
like
a little bit more about the firm and exactly what it is that OpticEase really does.
So OpticEase is a regulatory compliance software company. And very specifically, we targeted a new regulation that came out in 2004 that was referred to at the time called FAS 123R. And basically what it did is it required all companies, regardless of whether they were private or public, to start expensing the value of their employee stock options on their books and records. And so for many companies, you know, especially privately held companies, that's how they would pay for, you know, a lot of their employees. I mean, that's how they would, it would incentivize them because, you know, as we all know, when you're starting your company, cash is king, and it's really hard to pay people sometimes market rate salaries. And so a lot of times you'll make those up with options and equity participation. And, you know, it's always been a really good model, and especially with venture-backed companies as well. So what happened in 2004 is the regulators got together, and they said, okay, these options really have value, and companies now need to start recording them on their books and records. And that had not been the practice in the past. And so the rule went into effect in January of 2006, and all of these companies now had to start complying, and they had no idea. And I was in that boat. I mean, I was the CFO and co-founder for another company called Oryx Energy here in Orange County. And I was sitting there, and EY had, you know, given me the guidance on this rule, and I was lost. I was totally lost. And as a CFO, I don't want to be in that position. I didn't want to feel lost. And I knew it was going to be a lot of work, and we decided, as I said, to build the company around that to help the CFO navigate through these uncharted waters or these new waters that we are, you know, we're all living in now. So that's our first application, is for the FAS 123R rule. We have now additional applications that we're working on for new rules that are coming out. And, you know, we all know the IRS and the, you know, FASB are coming up with new accounting rules all the time. And so our dedication and commitment to our clients is that we're going to follow those rules. We're going to, you know, work with the audit community. We're going to work with the legal community. We're working with all different kinds of partners to make sure we understand those regulations. And then we're developing applications so that you can handle them and don't have to worry about it.
What fascinates me about that story, Kim, is that, you know, here was a new regulation, a big burden, a major issue, turned it into an opportunity for a brand new business that really could not have existed prior to this problem.
Exactly right.
That's amazing. And, you know, I kind of like that because it's one of those stories that we need to hear, particularly in these kind of troubled economic times where some people are willing to just kind of throw in the towel and say there's too many problems, and others like yourself are looking at it saying, hey, these problems have created a potential somewhere. Where is it? So
absolutely.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know,
and,
one
you
other
know,
thing, excuse me, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to add to that. You know, I think the other thing, too, that really prompted us in, you know, designing an application to handle this is that it's the evolution of software, too. You know, I remember way back when, and I do have enough gray hair to say this, that, you know, I used to do my financial statements in an Excel spreadsheet. And, you know, and actually it was prior to Excel, it was Lotus 123. And, you know, so we used to use these tools that we had, not knowing or not even envisioning at some point that there would be applications designed specifically for that kind of a purpose. And so this is just what I think is almost a natural progression of the market and software and embracing technology in these new areas. And, you know, wow, what can we do with this now?
Well, you know, what appeals to me with what you're doing is, you know, not many people, I may be one of the exceptions, not many people have a lot of interest in learning how to use detailed technical programs like Excel to do complicated tasks or any other product. They'd rather buy a product that just is designed for their problem, plug in the numbers, and it solves their problem. And it sounds like that's what you've done.
Exactly right. One of the models that I always use in discussions is TurboTax. I give a lot of credence to Intuit and how brilliantly they have designed that product so that a layperson who doesn't understand how to file a tax return can do so with confidence. Just like you said, they're not going to be sitting there crunching numbers on an Excel spreadsheet or building their own model, but they feel comfortable in using that application because it really brings it down to their level of understanding, but taking these complex rules and making it so that they can, you know, meet what they need to do with the IRS looking over their shoulder, right? So, you know, that's a company we basically try to aspire to, is to bring in that level of complexity to that level of ease of use.
Wonderful. You know, before we go any further, I want to ask you what really is frankly my favorite question with all of our guests that we've had on the show, and I've never gotten the same answer twice yet. So we'll see how my luck is holding.
Okay.
And that is, what particular experience or key lesson have you learned that you would like to pass on to our listeners that sort of has broad application for anybody running a business today?
Oh, that's a great question. And I can only answer it with one answer?
Okay.
I'll bring the most important one. I think one of the things that's, I think, key for any company or any person starting a company is to, and, you know, you have to understand where I'm coming from the financial aspect, is really being in tune with the day-to-day financial requirements of the company. And I've seen so many companies get into trouble because they're really not, you know, sort of monitoring things. They're not close enough to really that number, which is, how much money are we taking in? How much money are we spending? And really having that discipline. So when, you know, times were a little tough last year, for sure. And, you know, we took in a very small amount of money to get Option E started, but we were able to actually go cash flow positive pretty quickly because we were very diligent in our expenditures, and we knew exactly when money was coming in and when money was going out. And so with all of the companies that I've started, and this is my sixth startup venture, not necessarily always my idea, but, you know, ground floor, that was always very critical for me, is the cash management of the business and really being focused on that.
Great, great lesson. And you know, I think it's a lesson that probably everybody would agree with you today, but 2 or 3 years ago, you know, I'm sad to say, I know a number of people that said, well, that's not really my most important thing. But
that's
obviously,
right,
if you don't know where the cash is, it makes life a lot more difficult.
Right. Absolutely. And I'm sure there's probably many other good ideas you've had over the past two that I could learn from myself. But that's one that I've definitely deployed in this company and others.
Oh, great. Thank you for sharing us that. And let me just sort of off track for a minute. This is your sixth startup. How is it the sixth time around? Any easier?
You know, I don't know if it's any easier. I've learned things along the way. Probably learned more from some of the failures in various aspects than some of the successes. But you know, it's just an energizing experience working for a startup company. There's nothing like that entrepreneurial spirit and everybody rowing in the same direction and, you know, all of the cliches that go with that. But I really enjoy that. And it's definitely my passion. And I feel like I can add a lot of value to these early stage companies because of the ability to multitask and to do other things. So is it easier? I would say maybe a little bit easier, but it's still a lot of hard work every day. Probably smarter. I think that's probably a better way to say it. Working smarter this time
around. I like
that
answer. Well, can you tell our audience really how your industry has been affected by the events of the past few years?
Absolutely. So, you know, having that regulatory, we call it the wind behind our sail, you know, because having that regulation requires companies to comply. So bottom line is that we have a market driver that maybe a lot of other companies in some other industries wouldn't necessarily have. We are kind of determined ourselves to be sort of a must-have product as opposed to, you know, a consumer product or something that maybe somebody could defer that purchase. So that being said, we still have seen a lot of hesitation, and we've seen a lot of our client base, struggle. And, we did have a little bit of turnover in our client base, but not much. I mean, knock on wood, most of our companies made it through, last year and the end of 2008 pretty well. But definitely not as many companies getting funding, which definitely impacts our business, because typically when a company gets financing through venture capital or maybe private equity, they usually set aside a certain percentage for an option pool. It's usually part of the closing. And so, you know, companies that are in any stage of financing, Series A, Series B, et cetera, you would normally see that option pool being set aside, and then hence the need for our application. But if the number of companies being financed, you know, that dropped 25% last year, that was pretty significant. So the number of companies that we would normally go after was definitely smaller.
So the leading indicator for growth in your particular business really is formation of new businesses, particularly privately or venture funded.
A lot of it is, yes, because that's where we would have probably the most impact is with those companies when they are just initiating a stock plan for their employees, trying to get things set off in the right way. Although a lot of the growth that we did have last year was displacement of current technologies. And so one of the things that we found out pretty quickly, or I did at least in this industry, is that a lot of the players in this industry were, let's just say, older technology type companies, more traditional client server kind of companies, and companies that were trying to have products that were designed for a different constituent now kind of meet the regulatory requirements for a CFO. So it's kind of like taking your, customer relationship management system and trying to make that into an accounting application. That was kind of the technology we were up against. And so by virtue of us now being in the market and having the auditors really like our application, recommend it, encourage, their clients to adopt it, we've been able to turn a lot of the clients that have been using prospects into clients that have been using other products. So, a couple of drivers there. So we've got the private companies that are, sort of newly funded. We also have a lot of public companies now and others that were using other technologies and now adopting OptionEase.
Okay. Correct me on this. Is that a one product? Are you offering at this point just the one product? I shouldn't say just.
That's what we call our flagship product. We actually have two additional products that we have as an offering. We offer what's called a cap table management product, so companies that need to manage not just their stock options, but also the shares issued to all of their investors and things of that nature. We have a full product suite around that. And we also just added in another product for public companies, which is called Employee Stock Purchase Plan. And there's a lot of, different and sort of unique regulations around that. And one of the other products that we have, too, which really doesn't have a name for it, is a product that revalues warrants that you get from your investor or that you've given to your investors. And we just did a webinar with Moss Adams this past week to basically illustrate this regulation. It's called FAS 157. And I don't want to get too technical, but this new regulation, it's actually a revision to a regulation, kind of caught everybody off guard again. And so Moss Adams and OptionEase have put out a webinar series to basically, talk about the issues and how companies are needing to, comply with this regulation and all the intricacies and so forth.
So there you go, audience. If you're listening in today and FAS 157 is something you've just heard about, you're on the cutting edge with learning about a brand new product that helps solve your problems in that area. Thanks, Kimberly.
Sure, there you go.
There you go. Well, you know, one of the things we had chatted about before we went on the air is really, you know, we always kind of like to ask our guests, tell us about a challenge that you're currently facing in your business that would be of interest to our audience.
Well, we're at an inflection point at Optionees, and you know, when you first start a company, if you're fortunate enough to have a couple of people start the company together, you've got a few people that wear a lot of hats, right? And you know, as you're growing, though, you really need to be able to let go of some of those responsibilities and trust your team now to pick those up and to develop that team. And so that's really where Optionees is. We went from, you know, three individuals when we first founded the company. We now have 30 employees, and we're going to be at 50 by the end of the year. And so we're growing rapidly, and managing that growth is our challenge right now. You know, keeping up with, you know, what I call all ends of the house, right? You've got your sales engine, you've got your product development and technology group, you've got, in our case, we have what's called implementation or professional services. And so it's managing and balancing those three different departments and making sure everybody's growing, you know, together, and we don't have one area that's being, you know, ignored or, you know, isn't being brought up as quickly as the other two or three or what have you. So that's our challenge right now, and it is tough because we've got to, you know, bring in the people that have this experience and this talent. You know, we've got to trust that they're going to, you know, pick it up and run with it. And, you know, it's a tough thing for founders to do, but it absolutely critical, not to, you know, as you said, it's critical mass radio, right? A very
That's
critical
right.
thing to do, and at the right time.
Well, and you know, I think that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I think that's one of the biggest challenges facing the growth of any successful company is when they sort of break that 25 employee barrier, which puts them at the point where the founder now has to step back and develop a management level below themselves and start to trust those people that have the same vision and the same passion that the startup group had.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're right on about that 25 employees. I think it was the 25th employee that came in here, but it was really close to that. And, you know, I've seen so many companies not break that barrier, or they waited a little too long, or sometimes they did it too soon.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's also another, you know, problem if you do it too soon. So, you know, it's finding that right time and balance and, you know, the right next hire, like you said, that management level is going to pick it up and have that same passion, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a common problem in our executive forums. We really have dealt with that more times than I could possibly remember, which is a testimony to the success many of our clients are having. And it's just the same. It doesn't make any difference what industry you're in. It's absolutely the same issue. It's a management issue, not an industry issue.
Well, I'm going to definitely be at your next forum then.
<I'm>
Sounds like I could learn some things from that forum for sure.
You know, I wouldn't put it past us to be able to introduce you to a few things. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised that you taught us a number of tricks too. So absolutely, we'd love to have you. And that's what our forums are all about, is executives from non-competitive businesses sitting down for a half day once a month and sharing their issues. Because like you mentioned earlier in the show, one of the advantages of having this be your sixth startup is that you've learned along the way. And unfortunately, the lessons we tend to learn the best are the ones where we've made mistakes. And boy, there's got to be a better, cheaper, faster way to do that. And participating in an executive forum is a way to do that, because you learn from the mistakes that other CEOs have made that they're willing to share with you in that kind of a confidential atmosphere.
Exactly.
So we would love to have you join us. But, you know, stepping away from the sort of generic issues, what are some of the unique challenges of leading a fast-growing technology firm in this time?
You know, probably the second challenge, besides the growth stage and where we're at, is the technology itself. And this is a new landscape. Software as a service has really changed the game with regard to the development of product and the availability of that product to the marketplace extremely quickly. And what used to happen, right, in traditional software development life cycles is that, you know, you'd get a product specification and you'd spend some time with engineering. And, you know, it was a very long, you know, laborious process to get a release out. And it was usually shrink wrapped or something. And there was a whole distribution, you know, piece to that and, you know, release notes and upgrade process and so forth. And so, you know, software used to take 6 months to a year to release a new version. Well, we're releasing a new version of our application every 3 and 4 weeks.
Wow.
So, you know, all of a sudden, you know, but we can't not do that same process. So we go through product specifications. We go through an engineering design session. We do all of those things, but very rapidly. And being able to quality assure that product before it hits the wire for these customers is so critical for us because there's, you know, we're a regulatory compliance application. We can't just throw stuff out that isn't well tested. We have to be pretty darn sure that it's rock solid by the time it gets out there. And because the regulations change pretty often, I think the FAS 123R rule changed about maybe 4 or 5 times since its release, and there's new regulations coming. We have to be able to respond to that quickly. So if, you know, E&Y or some of the other auditors have an interpretation of the rule, we need to incorporate that into our software right away because that's now the new standard. And so we have a new moniker for the company, which is called Standardizing Compliance. And it's taking all of these new things and really doing that very quickly, very efficiently with the quality assurance and becoming the new standard. So I'd say that's a really specific challenge for us.
So taking from today's news stories, you certainly are trying very hard and to set up systems and procedures to avoid sort of the Toyota debacle that we're reading about in the news every night now.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we're not having any acceleration problems here at Optionese. We want to be able to keep our foot on that accelerator. So yes, exactly. And you know, you're always going to have an issue. It's a matter of the magnitude of the issue and how do you respond and how do you get back to a state of normalization too. So not to say that we're not going to have some hiccups in our design and development, but we have really honed that process. And we also have this maybe a fairly unique concept for us in our industry right now, which is kind of our partner program. So we have a number of users on our system that are not really the direct client. These are regional CPA firms, valuation firms, what I call the trusted advisor to the CFO, who help them with regulations. And so those partners of ours basically also look out for the best interest of the product and making sure we know about new regulations. And so it's a whole community, really, that is involved in the Optionese process.
Interesting. And you call these partners, and they're really people who are expertise and knowledgeable in the field, but not customers who are giving you feedback on sort of beta testing. Would that be accurate?
That's pretty accurate. They also will be servicing, in a lot of ways, they'll service their own clients with our application. So, for example, if we had a regional accounting firm who is one of our partners, and I put quotations around that because I know there's a legal term for partners. But what they would do is they would use their application to be able to provide this as a service to perhaps a small group or even a large group of companies that may not even have a CFO at the time or may have outsourced all of their accounting, may only have a part-time CFO who can't really do this on their own. And so we'll leverage these kinds of relationships to offer the service to, you know, that basically that end client through these partners. And in return, we ask them for their assistance in new ideas, new testing, better ways and efficiencies in working with our application, because they're becoming what we call sort of the super user, right? Because they've got these multiple companies now with all of these different nuances for each company, and it builds a better product overall.
Excellent. I'm sure that's a model that could be applied to some other businesses too that may be of interest to our listeners.
Absolutely. And I'm a big believer in collaboration. I feel that anytime you can kind of like your CEO roundtables and executive forums, right? Whenever you can, you know, get that group to help you with issues, you hopefully avoid that pitfall. And we do that as part of our application. You know, we talk to the clients that we have and we say, hey, we've got this community of users and, you know, advisors effectively that can help you with any particular issue you might have or, you know, from a grander scale, you know, looking at these new regulations together and helping design the best applications. You know, we've always got our hand up to our ear saying, you know, talk to us, you know, what can we do to help you? And, you know, let our clients know that they're not alone out there, that they've got this group of people that they can come kind of back to for these regulatory questions.
Which is probably the reason, as you mentioned earlier in the show, why you have really sort of maintained your client base in these difficult times, but the issue has been adding new clients.
Yes.
Obviously, the emphasis you put on servicing there really has resulted in clients staying with you.
Well, and that's interesting. Another point, Doug, that I think is a good one to make here is that software as a service, to me, is equally weighted between software and service. Because, you know, it used to be that, you know, you would get a software application and you'd have to struggle in trying to, you know, install it and, you know, upgrade it and configure it for your own environment and sort of do all these things, right? Well, not anymore. I mean, for us to be able to get that client to renew their subscription, because it's all subscription-based. And if they don't like what they have or they're not getting that value, they're going to stop paying. And so it is upon us to make sure that user experience is top-notch. They're on the application. They get it. They understand it. They feel comfortable. And that's how we do that is through that service component as much as the software.
Boy, as a user of lots of different software, I sure know what you're talking about, and I wish everybody felt that way.
Well, if they did, then I'd have a lot more competition.
Let's see, one more question here, or a couple more, but
yeah.
How does the board of directors affect your model?
You know, it's actually... You mean as far as our company and our board or just having a board of directors in one of our client companies, for example?
Well, whichever one.
Or
go
both.
Ahead. Take a shot at it.
Because I rely on my board for a lot, actually. Guidance and leads into companies and recruiting and all kinds of things. So we're very active in engaging our board. But the board of directors has really changed over the last few years. And governance responsibility at the board level, and it's only going to be increasing. And in fact, our public company clients have some new mandates that came out just this year for governance, additional governance requirements, and that will eventually, you know, trickle down to the privately held companies too. So boards need to be very aware of what's going on, and one of our benefits to the board is that our product lives into perpetuity. So, you know, the product that we are offering and the service and the software doesn't reside on the desk of any one person in the company. It's not, you know, in the CFO's file. It's not in the controller's file. It's not in your HR manager's file. It's out in a secure site on the web. It's accessible by anyone who has a secure logon. And that product continues. And so if there's turnover in the organization, the board can be assured that that information around their equity and their stock compensation and everything else is still being maintained per the regulation.
So you've got a strong appeal to the members of the board in terms of making them feel more comfortable with their fiduciary responsibilities and that it's really being taken care of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some of our clients will actually offer read-only access because you don't want necessarily your board members getting in there and, you know, being able to change things, right? But they offer read-only access to the board members. We have most of our clients actually offer read-only access to their auditors. And so kind of going back to that collaboration statement, you know, we're bringing this information up to the forefront because there's a lot of I'm sure you've probably heard about some of the problems in stock options, you know, all the backdating scandals and, you know, all of that news and all of those different cases, those are real circumstances. You know, I mean, companies were sued and there's shareholder lawsuits and there's, you know, even jail time for CEOs and CFOs out there from companies because they weren't doing this the way they should have been doing it. And they were, you know, gaining themselves personally. And so the board, you know, may or may not even have known about these kinds of things. Well, by having a system like Optionees, they do have the ability to have that view and to have that oversight, but not necessarily be able to change things, which is a good control.
Well, you know, I think that's a very strong point. It certainly rings a chord with me personally. Last week was one of the boards I'm on. They just had the annual shareholders meeting, and the directors were asked to say a few words, and it was kind of an eye-opener to me to really look at the years I have spent on this board and how my role as a director from when I first went on the board to what it is now has really expanded so much because of the regulations and the oversights that are now required of directors. It's a whole different job.
It is a different job, and you know, the best practices that need to be deployed, you know, the board is responsible for that. And in some cases, you know, your D&O coverage can be violated if those things aren't put into place. And so we've seen companies, you know, unfortunately with their D&O coverage now, maybe this is an exclusion area. So if they don't have a system or they don't have a control measure or some sort of a oversight, then their D&O coverage won't cover them in the case that there is a shareholder lawsuit on this.
Yeah,
boy, that doesn't make you want to sit on a board anymore.
Well, you know, one of the
or if that comes up, have them call Optionees.
Believe me, that's already on my notes here. Thank you very much, Kim. You know, I've been asking a lot of questions, and sometimes I worry that I may have taken you down a path other than what you wanted to talk about. Is there anything else that you would kind of like to bring up or talk about with your firm or your experience that I've kind of moved you off of that now's a good time to mention it?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I just would like to emphasize is that, you know, we're a software company here in Orange County, and we are making a very dedicated approach to hiring and retaining employees here in Orange County. And I think it's really important to do that from an Orange County-based business. And, you know, it's hard because competitively, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people offshore technology and, you know, they outsource, you know, different aspects of their business. But we're a very firm believer in local talent and, you know, and building that here in Orange County. And so, you know, I'm hoping that maybe the other guests you've had on, you know, in the past do that or promoting Orange County businesses and so forth. So,
well, I think I certainly would agree. How could I disagree with that since I'm an Orange County based business and have been for 30 years or more here? But, you know, one of the things I think we've seen is many companies, both service companies and manufacturing, looked very heavily at offshoring and moved into offshoring. And then with the change in the economy, the change in their customer demands, the shifting volumes that they had to adjust to, I think they found that some of those advantages were more mythical than they were real.
Hmm.
And, you know, and I applaud you, particularly in this high technology field, for looking for local employees rather than just leaping to that wide world of the internet to hire people remote that are in other places. I think we do have an obligation as a local business owner to look at home first.
Well, and I think it's good for everybody. You know, we start building that base back up again, and I know it got hit, you know, over the last couple of years with the mortgage industry and everybody else, you know, some of these other businesses not making it. So, you know, so basically we are hiring and we're hiring local people. So I think that's a good message for this show for sure.
That's a great message for this show, which, you know, if I can just elaborate on that for a minute or ask another question, if your leading business indicator is new funding, new businesses, new startups, or new growth in companies, and you're looking to hire people, does that mean that you see some sign of additional growth in startup companies and new ventures?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not sure if that'll happen necessarily this year or if it's going to be maybe hopefully, you know, end of this year, early next. We're getting ready for the for that turnaround to occur, and I think it's going to be a little bit different of a landscape, but I think there's money there, and people are waiting for the right time to invest. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, I think like everybody else is, that it's not too long until it happens. But there's still a lot of investment dollars out there. And the companies, what's interesting, though, is the companies who are getting funding are the ones that really have themselves in order. And so, you know, that also promotes our business because the ones who are getting the funding are the companies that recognize, you know, the governance issues and the compliance areas and, you know, have audited financials. And they really have buttoned down a lot of the risk areas that are the easy ones to button down for an investor. So when you're talking to an investor and you say, you know, I've got audited financial statements, I understand what these, you know, FAS rules are all about, I've got systems in place for this, they make it an easier diligence process for that investor to say yes. Now, they may have other risks, right, business risks and all the other things that they have to work on, but at least in that regard, they've taken that checkbox off. And so I think that's important to note. The other one, though, too, is that the public markets, we've seen some very interesting things going on. Many of our clients have filed their S-1s. We've got a lot of companies that are really considering going public, which I quite honestly didn't think was going to happen. So maybe the public markets are going to really heat up. So that'll be exciting.
Well, it may be one of the strongest places for additional funding that is available in the near future. So that does make a certain kind of sense.
Yeah. You know, so, we'll keep our fingers crossed for both.
Yeah, we will. And even beyond keeping our fingers crossed, we're going to keep working hard. One of the many companies, and I don't know that this was true in your company, but many companies in the last year or so have had to cut back on employees, cut back on hours, cut back on compensation, benefits, and other sorts of things. And what is it that you're doing within your company to really retain your employees beyond compensation packages?
You know, that's a really good question, especially right now, because we got to that sort of over 25 employees, and we're really doing a lot of growth for our employees within our company and really putting a lot to training programs, additional education programs, especially this year. We just had, we call this an all-hands meeting, and we did one yesterday with our executive team sort of kicking it off, but opening it up for the employees to, for everybody to contribute. And so, not to beat the collaboration horse to death, but it's really all about that. I think, you know, with all of the new tools we have in the world today, right? We've got Twitter, we've got instant messaging, we've got all these different things. It's really bringing that information to people and making people feel part of whatever it is that they're doing. So it's like part of the organization, part of the success and failures, and part of the decision-making process, and feeling strong in their position, whatever that might be at Option E. So we've got these training programs. We're sponsoring scholarships for basically an institute that's in our industry. We're doing employee promotional programs. So if they bring in a new hire, they get paid a spiff for that. And we do off-site meetings. We do team building kinds of things at least a couple of times a year. And we're trying to do more of that. You know, so it isn't always about financial incentives either. It's about listening to the employee and having they have a voice here. And it's true. It's not just we're not just saying that. And we started, in fact, from our meeting yesterday, we started this thing called the graffiti board. And it's just a big whiteboard in the hallway. And it's placed strategically close to the kitchen because we know people will at least see it once or twice a day. And basically, it's whatever ideas they have. It can be something crazy. It can be something, you know, fundamental to the company. It can be about a client. It can be whatever it is. And it's their bright idea. And we have them right up on the board, and once a week we take all of that information and we post it on what's called a SharePoint site so everybody else can have access to that, and it's memorialized. And so we're going to be using those ideas to develop additional corporate goals. We're going to be using those ideas to help better our product for our customers because, you know, there's so much knowledge in a company, and you just have to ask, I guess. Maybe that's what we needed to do. So we're doing it.
Well, that's wonderful. Boy, that was a lot more answer than I expected, and I'm very impressed with the effort you're making.
Well, it's fresh in my mind because we just did it yesterday, and actually it's kind of cool because we've got all these different markers and all these different colors now on the board, and there's probably 20 suggestions out there already, and we just did this meeting yesterday. So I guess it's working so far.
Well, you know, and I'm glad to hear you doing that because more and more our clients are looking to us for help with this problem because many of us believe that we may be on the verge of maybe the biggest kickback from employees that we've ever seen, in that many employees who've had pay reductions and hour cuts and bonuses and all those other things removed, mm-hmm. as things get a little better and there's other places to go, they're not complaining now because nobody wants to risk losing a job, but deep down, they may be harboring a sort of grudge as to who's responsible for this, and it must be the company I'm working for today. So when there's another option, maybe I'll leave. And, you know, in anticipation of that, we are working with a number of our clients in doing extensive employee surveying, using online blind surveying techniques to really protect their confidentiality and get hard data as to what the employees really feel about the company and the management and their way they're treated, and get that data and then react to it in many of the ways that you're just talking about that you're already doing. So that's wonderful.
Great. Well, and that employee survey, that's a great idea. I mean, we haven't done that, and that's something we may deploy here too. Because a lot of times people won't speak up, right? They like the
They won't. And we found that really the only way to get a good employee survey is to have it done by an outside entity. Mm-hmm. And have it done through the internet where there is no way to trace back their responses and really get them comfortable that this is confidential data.
Well, and I think it's so imperative that, you know, companies recognize that would you call it a kickback?
Yes.
Yeah. Because the people that you have in your company right now, those are the cream of the crop. Those are the ones you can't live without. I mean, those are the ones who have survived, you know, multiple rounds of layoffs and, you know, have really stuck by you because they're valuable. And, you know, losing those people could be extremely detrimental for any company.
Absolutely. Well, look, how about community involvement? I understand you're involved in a number of things there.
Not as many as I wish I could, but yes, one of the ones that I still am trying to be fairly active in is called the Association for Women in Technology, and it's called AWT, and it's a local, I think it's a national organization, and they promote women in technology roles. I'm a very active member, too, in the OCVG, which is the Orange County Venture Group. And I've been a member there for many years as well. And so I'm really more into the professional organizations than I am in sort of any of the other arts or other things. But, you know, I'm a big believer in that. And whenever you can give back or you can be part of those, you know, outside of yourself community activities is excellent. And, you know, I think as my company gets bigger and, you know, I don't have as much day-to-day responsibility. It's my goal to do more of that.
Oh, you're kidding yourself that your day-to-day responsibility is going to be reduced. It's just going to change, Kim. Come on.
Oh, I was hoping.
One more question I made a note of when you were talking earlier that I wanted to ask you, and then I don't want to impose too much on your time here, is what are you doing with social media in your firm?
Oh, that's a great question, Doug. And one that I haven't really embraced myself very much, but we brought on a very seasoned marketing professional. His name is Kevin Liebel, and he is just an absolute marketing guru. And that is what he is promoting through Optionee. So we're on Twitter, and we are also looking at putting out a blog and upgrading our website and doing that and really embracing these tools. And I think it's something that really enhances our application because it gives us the ability to bring this information to our employees, to our clients. And, you know, so for example, let's say that the IRS changes a regulation that affects all of our clients and they have to do it quickly. I mean, you know, sometimes that does occur. And so, you know, by doing a tweet on that and getting that out to everybody and being able to use some of the, you know, social media tools to do that is really critical for us. We also do LinkedIn, and we're part of groups. In fact, there's even FAS 123R groups in LinkedIn, believe it or not. And, you know, so we're embracing those areas to work that collaboration even more.
Wonderful.
I'm a big believer now. You know, I was a little skeptical, but I'm definitely coming around to that's the way that business is going to be done, and that's where people are going to go for information and, you know, confirmation of new products especially, things like that.
And here you are on internet radio, also another form of social media.
Exactly. Who would have thought that a couple years ago, right?
Who would have thought that? Well, Kim, thank you very much for spending the time with us today. How does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm?
Probably the best way is to hit our website, which is www.optionease, and it's option with EASE.com. And, you know, that's really the best way to go. We have a whole contact us and submission form for more information, and there's my bio out there and a way to contact me directly and so forth. So it's the best way to go.
Can we find your Twitter and LinkedIn sites through your website?
I'm going to have to go make sure Kevin has that up there, but absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, now that we've made this connection, I have to see what you're doing on Twitter, obviously.
So we'll definitely forward that if it's not available on our website. So
great.
We'll
thank
sure
you. And if it isn't, then we'll make our guests make them aware of it at a future time.
Sounds
Kim,
good.
Thank you very much for joining us today on octalkradio.net here on Critical Mass for Business. And we certainly appreciate your time.
Doug, it's been my pleasure. And I've actually learned a lot here myself, too. So I really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. Well, that was Kim Kovacs of Option Ease. Absolutely. Once more, another fascinating interview. They just keep rolling along here. They get better and better. And we certainly appreciated her time. You know, there's a couple of opportunities that I want to make you aware of, our listeners. One is there's a great community event coming up. Those of you interested in coaching, February is International Coaching. There is an International Coaching Week. There's an opportunity for you to join the ICF, International Coach Federation, Orange County Chapter at Brandman University in Irvine. If you've heard about coaching, you've thought about being a coach, or you've thought about hiring a coach, you don't know what they can do for you, this is a great opportunity to experience coaching from 15 of Orange County's top coaches who are going to make presentations on topics, coaching for business, coaching for life, and coaching for career. It's a full-day event, limited to just 100 guests. Last year, I think there were over 300, so you need to register early this year. You might go to the ICFOrangeCounty.com website and look for the Coaching Week link there. Click on it to register and learn more about it. If you do come to the event, I will be presenting there, talking about coaching for performance, better performance, higher performance, and executive management teams. So be sure to come up and say hello to me and let me know about it. Also, Rick and I, twice a year, put on a executive conference here in Orange County. We hosted it at the Center Club in the morning. Our next event is going to be March 2nd. At the Center Club, we invite all of our radio show guests and our executive forum members, and we have got an absolutely fascinating panel this year talking about the new reality. Are things going to go back to the way they were, or are we looking at a new reality with new rules, and what do we need to do about that to redesign or fine-tune our businesses to continue to make them successful as they are if this happens to be the long-run picture? So two great opportunities for you to enhance your learning, enhance your exposure to other thought leaders here in Orange County. And we would hope that you take advantage of them, and we hope that you continue to take advantage of listening to us here on our weekly show, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 4 o'clock to 5, octalkradio.net. If you want to download any of our past shows, you can look at the radio station site, or you can go to our site, Critical Mass for Business, forbusiness.com. So this is Doug Gefeller thanking you for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and Rick and I look forward to sharing more exciting stories from successful business owners here in Orange County. Thank you.
You've been listening to Critical Mass.